We're talking about vaccine rollout here in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. Several counties have more than half of their residents who've received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. That's Bayfield, Dane, and Door. Shots into arms in those counties is more than double the rate of Clark and Taylor counties at 22% of residents who've received at least one dose. So why is that? How is your community doing on uptake? What letter grade would you give at this point? It's 800-642-1234. David Wahlberg is a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, and he recently wrote about our state's geographic gaps in vaccination rates. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Well, give us a bird's eye view, if you would. How great is the variance that you see in vaccine uptake around the state?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, there's three counties that are clearly at the top, and that's Door, Dane, and Bayfield counties, which are in different parts of the state. And then three counties that are at the bottom, Clark, Taylor, and Rusk counties, are all sort of clustered together just sort of northeast of Eau Claire. So there's variation around the state, but those are the most stark differences.
What's going on? Why do you see those stark differences?
Well, you know, I don't think there's any one reason for it, but I think it's a mix of factors. One is the number of vaccinators that are available in different parts of the state. Some of those counties only have three or four places that are routinely giving out vaccines, where other counties have many more. They may not be ordering as much vaccine from the state as some others, but there's also factors like demographics, because early on in the vaccination effort, of course, you know, healthcare workers and then people 65 and older were eligible. And so Bayfield County and Door County, for example, have higher rates of older adults than other parts of the state. But then you also have to get into attitudes about vaccine. So there may be more hesitancy in some of those counties, and you know, whether in terms of how people vote, there's correlation between how people have voted and vaccine rates too.
Yeah, let's look at the political influences in just a moment. But I'm wondering, in your reporting, have you encountered ways in which communities or the state are addressing vaccine skepticism head on, or making progress in combating the hesitancy that's out there?
Yeah, well, so for this piece, I did talk to somebody from, she's actually from the Eau Claire Health Department, but she's part of a regional coalition promoting immunization in that part of the state, so near some of these counties with the lowest rates. And she was saying, for example, they're doing radio ads to try to capture the farming community in that area, since they tend to listen to the radio, perhaps including your show.
Thank you.
So that's, you know, one way that they were trying to tailor messages. I know the state, you know, in addition to providing vaccine to health departments and hospitals and clinics and other types of vaccinators, they also have mobile teams that can go out and sort of support concentrated vaccination efforts in places that need them. They've done that in Milwaukee quite a bit, for example, but they did talk about maybe doing that more in some of these rural counties with the lower rates.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with David Wahlberg, who's a health and medicine reporter. He's been looking into the geographic gaps in vaccination rates around the state and what to make of them. You can join in with your thoughts, how your county is doing on uptake and where it stands. 800-642-1234. Chris is joining us from Madison. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I'm a nurse by profession, and I've been fighting COVID in the hospitals. We're working to help patients fight COVID in the hospitals for the last year and a half. And I have COVID fatigue over this. It's just ridiculous that we're even talking about this. the legislature and the governor have totally dropped the ball. Everybody that's got a phone should be calling both Robin Voss and Governor Evers and telling them, knock off the politics and get to work. They need to pass, exemption for liability for everybody and get everybody back into work and school, and then make and the vaccines mandatory. I'm sorry if you have a hesitancy about the vaccine. I've had COVID, recovered from it. I've rolled way too many people into body bags. And I've also then gotten my vaccine.
Chris, Chris, thank you for being on the front lines and for bringing your perspective. You know, David, do you hear that sentiment that this vaccine should be mandatory?
Yeah, I think a lot of public health people would say that there might be some backlash from a mandate, a government mandate for vaccine, that it might make those who are hesitant about it sort of even more resistant to it. Some employers mandate it. Not very many have so far with COVID vaccination, but some do for flu shots, for example. Hospitals, for example, do for staff. I think most people, most health officials think it's better to just encourage the COVID-19 vaccine.
David, where are we on the path toward herd immunity? Where does that stand?
Yeah, so herd immunity is this concept that, you know, if you vaccinate a significant portion of the population, then that should protect against outbreaks. And it's not only vaccination. It also includes people who naturally got infection, at least recently. So most people say herd immunity is roughly 80%. That's the target Wisconsin is going for. They're trying to vaccinate 80% of the population. And of course, currently, people 16 and younger aren't eligible for vaccine, and they make up about 20%. So basically, we are just over 40% of all of the population as of yesterday. We're at 40.7%. So we're just over halfway to that goal right now in Wisconsin.
I want to look at variants for a moment, because the State Lab of Hygiene and other labs, they've been doing this genetic sequencing on a portion of the positive tests around the state to look for variants. They've tested about 9,700 specimens at last check. How do vaccination rates impact the ability of variant strains to spread and take hold?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, the more transmissible a virus is, the higher rate you need of vaccination or protection in order to have herd immunity. So if you think about measles, that's one of the most easily spread viruses around. And so generally, health officials think you have to have 90 to 95% vaccination rates to have herd immunity for measles. So the 80% for COVID has been mostly based on the initial COVID, which does spread fairly easily, but not as easily as measles, but more so than flu. But now with these variants, they spread more easily than original COVID. So the more that the variants become part of what we're seeing with COVID, you might need a higher rate of vaccination to achieve that herd immunity.
We're talking with David Wahlberg, who's a health reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal, as we look into the unevenness of vaccination county by county, what the numbers say. Do you know how many of your nearby friends and neighbors have been vaccinated? How difficult was it to find or schedule your COVID vaccine? What things did your county health department do well to make the process smoother? Where did you encounter barriers? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with David Wahlberg here on the Ideas Network. Vaccination rates vary widely across our state, and we're learning about what could be the cause of the geographic gaps here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So the state is this patchwork of vaccine penetration that is varying quite a bit county by county. Have you been vaccinated? What was the process in the process surprised you? If you haven't received the vaccine, what are your barriers? What are the challenges? Join in 800-642-1234. David Wahlberg is a health and medicine reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal, and he stays with us. Let's bring in Bill now in Ashland with thoughts. Bill, hi.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, I'm disturbed that we're even reporting all these vaccine rates per county, per person, across the country, across the state. I mean, we don't report how many people have, you know, were diagnosed with cancer in the month of March in Taylor County. We don't report how many people had heart disease in Eau Claire County in April. I mean, there's so many other things that people have, you know, come down with, died from. It's even more debilitating than this very, very political disease. And that's the only reason we're reporting on it is because of politics.
Bill, let's get David's response here. Why do we have these dashboards of very granular data?
Well, I think you would find that data on rates of different diseases like cancer and such are reported by county around the country. That is the case. But, you know, with COVID-19, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. It's not done. And vaccination is essentially the way out of it, if health officials believe. So tracking how the vaccination effort is going throughout the country, whether that's state by state or within a state, county by county, is a way to let health officials, you know, see how it's going and also let the public understand where they're at and where the communities around them are at.
And as we can hear, the pandemic has become a thorny political issue, public health wrapped up into politics. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's interesting. And vaccination itself has become political in some ways, too. So, you know, recent polls last week found that roughly 43-45% of people who identify as Republican have not gotten the vaccine or don't want to. And roughly 5-7% of people who identify as Democrat said the same thing. It's interesting, and by the way, in Wisconsin, the counties with the lowest rates voted overwhelmingly for former President Trump last fall in the presidential election. But it's not completely clear cut. I mean, President Trump himself got the vaccine along with the First Lady before they left office. He has advocated, encouraged people to get the vaccine. And in fact, his administration was really behind the development of the vaccines. They put a lot of money into this effort and had Operation Warp Speed, which really led to the speedy release of these vaccines. And even in Wisconsin, you know, counties like Waukesha, which tend to be highly Republican, that has a higher than average rate in the state. So it's an interesting dynamic. It's not completely clear cut.
I want to land here on health equity, which has been a huge challenge in this pandemic. What are the racial disparities in the vaccination rates between people of color and white people?
Yeah, those have been clear here in Wisconsin and around the country. So in Wisconsin, roughly almost 40% of white people have had at least one dose of the vaccine so far. For Blacks, it's under 18%. Hispanics, it's a little under 23%. American Indians, it's a little under 25%. And Asians, it's about 33%. And for those of you doing the math at home, there's the reasons these don't all add up to the state totals is that some people have other or unknown race. So it's pretty stark. It's roughly a 2-to-1 difference with whites and African Americans.
Very quickly, what are you watching for as the vaccination rates continue, the dashboards continue in this phase of the pandemic?
Well, I think we're at this transition phase right now where we're kind of moving from super high demand and scarcity of vaccine to seeing more supply of vaccine in a lowering of demand. You know, in Dane mm-hmm. County, the Alliant Energy Center has many open slots now for vaccines. You know, that was not the case just a week or two ago. You know, President Biden yesterday was talking about tax credits for businesses to encourage vaccine. And the Kaiser Family Foundation just came out the other day with a prediction that in about 2 to 4 weeks, we'll be at this tipping point where essentially everybody in the country who wants a vaccine will have had one or at least had an appointment. And then we're moving to the phase where it's just people who aren't sure about it or don't want vaccines that are left.
David, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here again. Thank you.
David Wahlberg is a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum remembering a woman whose life was cut far too short.
Menominee tribal member Ray Elaine Turtelot was 18 when she went missing on the tribe's reservation during the fall of 1986. Tribal police and the FBI found her remains the following spring. Her daughter, Elise Arce, and relative Andrea Lemke Roshan sat down to talk about Ray with WPR's Daniel Kading. They also shared their hopes for a new task force that's focused on murdered and missing Indigenous women in Wisconsin.
My name is Elise Arce. I'm Ray's daughter.
I'm Andrea Lemke Roshan, and I'm Ray Elaine's cousin and friend. Ray Elaine was pure joy. She and I grew up together. We were kids. She lived on the reservation and I didn't. So I loved whenever we would go visit. She was laughing all the time. She was a huge joker and just a really beautiful girl and a really beautiful young woman. And that beauty radiated really from the inside out.
I just know that she was really outgoing and she had a lot of spirit and a lot of lift. She loved to dance, powwow dance. She was Menominee princess. She was very into our culture, singing and drumming class, Menominee language.
The time we would spend together, she would try to teach me Menominee. She tried to teach me to dance. She told me I was a hopeless dancer. I never quite could do it, but she was a gorgeous dancer. She did fancy dancing, and that's supposed to mimic a butterfly. And Ray Elaine looked like a butterfly embodied when she danced. It was just really beautiful.
And she was very family-oriented.
I hadn't seen Elise in a few years, and I had gone back up for a family gathering at my cousin Ray's sister's house. And Elise and I, Elise, you were a teenager, but we were on a pontoon boat ride together. And Elise threw her head back and laughed. And I thought, oh, my God, there she is. There's Ray. There's Ray Lane right there, right in front of me.
It's nice to hear stuff like that because a part of me feels like she's living through me. She's always around me all the time.
I remember getting a message saying, you need to call home right away. It was in October of 1986. And I called home and my mom was sobbing. She just couldn't even get the words out to tell me that Ray was missing. And I couldn't wrap my head around it because I knew she had just given birth to Elise.
I was only 2 months old when this happened. This was something that kind of shook our whole reservation from what I know, because my aunties kept newspaper clippings and everything from way back then.
We learned that part of her body had been found in a beaver dam on the reservation. So it was very, very hard.
I just don't want any other family to go through what we went through. I see and I know the pain of my family because I can see it in their eyes and how they are.
I think this missing and murdered Indigenous women work is the first time that I feel like there's something tangible that I can do to try to make a difference. We really do want to raise awareness that this is a problem impacting Native women and Native girls, and we need it to stop, and we want it to stop.
It's something that needs to be fixed within the system. And that's why I'm saying, like, I don't want another family dealing with what we are dealing with. I don't want people going off with cold cases for 34 years. I don't want them to have this pain that we carry around with us every day. That's what I want out of this, because, I mean, and I feel like that would be her only justice of this, is to help other families, because nobody should ever have to feel what we felt.
WPR's Danielle Kading brought us that story, remembering Ray Elaine Turtelot, a Menominee tribal member who was killed in 1986. Her family is participating in the new Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And just ahead, we discuss the revised state contract with the state's top economic development official, Missy Hughes. That's after a news update on the Ideas Network.